This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The cleanup of Ground Zero is nearly completed. Only people involved with the recovery effort have been allowed on the site, but my guest photographer Joel Meyerowitz has been able to get unlimited access to document the transformation of Ground Zero. Meyerowitz has joined us a couple of times to talk about this work. We invited him back to discuss his photos in this week's New Yorker, spanning from September 23rd through May 1st. His entire collection will be given to the Museum of the City of New York. The State Department has sponsored an exhibition of his photos, which toured around the world. And in August, some of his pictures will be on exhibit in the lobby of 195 Broadway on the periphery of Ground Zero. Well, Joel Meyerowitz, welcome back to Fresh Air. I'd like to start by asking you to describe a few of the photos in this week's edition of The New Yorker. Why don't we start with one of the photos that you took just, you know, at the end of September?
Thanks for having me back again, Terry. That fold-out picture is a two-part panorama. That was the first night I spent down at the site, and it was the night that I met the team of detectives from the Arson Explosion Squad, who ultimately became my guardians down there. And they were so excited by this potential project of mine that they literally carried my equipment and me up 9 flights of stairs to a rooftop of the Dow Jones building. And there in front of me was this extraordinary image of the center in heaps, piled everywhere, with stadium lights on it, mysterious in its brilliant shine and its dark pockets and smoke coming out of it. And it was a scene, you know, I couldn't have ever conceived the amount of damage, the strewn about quality, the collapsed, almost elastic look of all of the metalwork as it draped itself over the building. In fact, the building in the foreground was a 30-story hotel that had been reduced to the size of what looks like a couple of buses, and it's just completely entombed in this metal. I took it in two different parts, trying to weave it together as a kind of faux panorama, because I felt the site needed this expansiveness to try to comprehend everything that was there.
On November 15th, you took a photo inside a daycare center right across the street from the North Tower of the World Trade Center. Tell us about this photo.
The making of it first, I mean, getting into it was something that was incredibly scary. Every day I would pass a flight of escalator steps that had been frozen at that moment and completely covered in dust and paper and refuse. And it always beckoned to me. And for some reason on this day, I thought, I'm going up there. I guess I heard they were going to tear that building down soon. And I made my way upstairs, and there, instead of a door, was a huge window that had been destroyed. And in the window, I saw cribs, lots of infant cribs piled up in a corner. And it was as if a huge hand had swept them aside. And it probably was the force of the wind that came roaring through there. And as I walked through this place, I saw all of the hasty retreat signals that were left there, like the kids' knapsacks were hanging on the hooks and their lunchboxes were in places, everything covered in dust. And then I came to these little cars lying on the floor, and they looked so much like a scene you would see from an aerial perspective looking down. In fact, one of them's an ambulance. If you look at the side, you could see a little red cross in the shadow there. And I thought, how strange. I mean, it's this scale displacement. Was I on top of a building looking down, or am I standing here looking at something at my feet? And then I noticed in the dust there were some masks, and there was a little castle cut out, and there were a few footprints there, almost the kind of footprints you see when you see NASA photographs of the moon. Those footprints are left in the dust forever. In this case, of course, forever was 6 months, and the building was torn down. But it just struck me as a kind of miniature of the thing that happened on that day.
Another photo of yours in this week's edition of The New Yorker. It's a column from the South Tower, which you say will be the last piece of building to be removed from the site. Has it been removed already?
No. This is, their plan is that on the last day, when all else has been carted away and raked clean, this tower, this column will be taken down, covered in flags, put on a flatbed, and everybody in the site will accompany it out of the site and take it to, I'm not sure about this, but they said a barge, and send it to wherever it goes. But there's a few stories about this I think you might be interested in. I was down there the other day, and since I took this picture, people have come down and written their fire station numbers on it and their rescue service numbers, etc. And then people who've lost sons or friends have begun to put their photographs up. And the other day, I was down there, just last week, and I saw one of these sites that's almost mythic. I saw two men, an older and younger man, walk into the place, now it's a pit, actually, where the column is. And the younger man got up on a little perch of concrete at the bottom and tried to put a photograph up. And he got it partway up, but it wasn't high enough for him. And the old man backed in and knelt down with his back to this guy and then pushed him upward on the column. He just used the force of his body as he began to push against the column and upwards. And he lifted this younger man up another 3 feet. And the guy put up the photograph and taped it around and everything. And I ran over to see it because it looked like this mythic connection of, you know, two men together. And when they came down, I spoke to them. And they were a father and a son, both firemen, and they had lost one of the other family members, another son. And they were putting this up there. And when I spoke to him, he said to me, and this is so strange, "We're lucky we found him." And you think, you know, I mean, this idea of they were lucky that they found the body. I mean, they were unlucky that they lost them, but that they expressed it as luck that they were able to find something to bury was so remarkable. The three of us stood there in tears.
The final photo in your collection in The New Yorker this week, your collection of photos from Ground Zero, was taken on May 1st when the pile was pretty level. Would you describe the photo?
Yes, I went back to the same vantage point that I made that first photograph on September 25th. I wanted to see what it looked like from that point of view. And really, it's a vast hole now. It's the bathtub, they call it. And it's almost completely empty. There's a pile of rubble that's not steel rubble, but mostly concrete and earth at the north end. And bit by bit, they're bringing that into these raking fields. They spread out the rubble about an inch or two thick and maybe 40 yards long. And 8 or 9 firemen walk in with rakes and they comb it. It's just this incredible scene, and it's the one continuous image that I have of the World Trade Center recovery. They're still down there, these firemen, leaning on their rakes like shepherds in a field. A new pile comes, and they go, and they scrape away, and maybe they'll find a shoe. And you see them. They pick the shoe up, and they sniff the shoe to see if there's any rot, and maybe there's a toe in the shoe that can be analyzed for DNA, and somebody will have some, you know, relief in a sense. And on Friday I was down there, and it was evening. The shift was over, and they had just laid out a new field, and there were no firemen around. And I made a picture just of this raking field. And into the picture comes a fireman, and he's heading home. He's got a sack on his back and everything, but he sees a rake that was laying there, and he picks the rake up, and instead of going to put it away, he starts raking. It's like he couldn't help himself. And I walked over to this guy, and we talked. His name was Tulio Tool. And I said, "It's hard for you to stop." And he said, "Yeah." He said, "That's us, gardeners in the Garden of the Dead."
Ew.
These men, I mean, so often have a kind of poetic nature about the work that they're doing. And they do it ceaselessly and with such devotion because they want to find every last, you know, possible remains so that when the site is completely shoveled clear, they know that they've done everything they could possibly do.
My guest is photographer Joel Myritz. We're talking about his ongoing documentation of Ground Zero. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is photographer Joel Myritz, and he's been documenting Ground Zero ever since September. And several of those photos are printed in The New Yorker this week. His entire collection will be given to the Museum of the City of New York. And through the museum for about 3 to 6 months, he's going to have a show just outside of Ground Zero at 195 Broadway in the lobby of the building there. And that will begin probably sometime in August. Joel, I know, like, just after September 11th, when we were all watching the images on TV of the destroyed World Trade Center, it was just impossible to imagine the site ever being cleared of so much rubble and so much steel. What's it like for you to look at Ground Zero now and see it basically cleared?
It's the strangest feeling, Terry, and I know I'm not alone because I speak to so many men down there who've been there the whole 8 months. There's a strange feeling of nostalgia. That time in September and October was a time of incredible commitment on the part of all these volunteers and workers down there, and the pile was so enormous that to attack it made you feel as if you were incredibly useful and you were doing something that was for, you know, the public good. And it had elements of, a heroic effort to associated with it. And now is this emptiness, and there are, you know, trucks buzzing around and getting the last bits of stuff out. And it does feel like there's a kind of longing for that moment when we were all brought together to do something that was going to set things right.
Have you been to Fresh Kills, the landfill where so much of the rubble has been taken?
Yes, I've been out there a few times, and it too is an astonishing collection of things because...
Well, this is a huge garbage dump, one of the biggest in the world, I think. And
right.
And added to it now is the debris of the World Trade Center. What did you see there?
Yes, and oddly enough, that landfill was closed a year ago by Mayor Giuliani. We had finally filled it up, and then this happened, and they had to open it again. And when you go there, it's as if they took the elements of the site itself and they cataloged them. So it's like a library of images. Over there are all the fire trucks, 98 of them, stacked up, one on top of each other or next to each other. And then there are the ambulances and the police cars and the EMS vehicles and private cars. I mean, everything is put in its place, except periodically you see a crazy juxtaposition. For example, there was a Rodin sculpture of a standing man, a beautiful, famous Rodin sculpture. The man is standing, and he's probably leaned over in a way. So he's made a gesture, almost a sorrowful gesture. And this was probably in some office. It's bigger than life. And it was destroyed in the fall of the buildings. And there was the Rodin sculpture lying on its side. And next to it was a piece of the airplane. And they were just dumped together as if, metal work that's not buses and trucks goes over here. And I came upon it, and I saw this rotor blade or something circular from the airplane. And next to it was this lying figure on the ground, almost as if it was sleeping. Incredibly powerful and strange.
Are there any things that you have saved as relics of the World Trade Center?
Yes, I have a couple of really astonishing things. I have a piece of folk art. The welders who are down there, the burners they're called, they doodle all the time. When they're not busy cutting things down, they often find a piece of metal, and they'll doodle drawings in it with the torch. And I have a piece of the World Trade Center. It's probably 16 inches long. It's part of an I-beam. And the guy has drawn in it the World Trade Center, both of them, with the antenna. And then out of the beam, he cut a gigantic cross which goes over the World Trade Center. It is a piece of naive art that is so beautiful in the directness of its making, the immediacy of its drawing. And I'm going to be giving that to the Museum of the City of New York, and hopefully it will travel with this exhibition. And the other thing I was given, just the very same day I made a photograph of the column we were talking about before, a fireman came over to me and said, "Hey, Joel, I think you should have this." And it was a big piece of metal, I would say probably close to 2 feet. And it was oddly shaped, you know, uneven all the way around. And welded to it by heat and pressure was a Bible. And the Bible was torn open and pages were missing and it had been burned and soaked along its side and covered in dirt. It was found 6 floors below ground. And the page that it was open to was the sermon, An Eye for an Eye. And he said, "I think you should have this." And he handed it to me. And it's an artifact, you know, that was seared together by the heat or the pressure.
What'd you do with that?
I dried it out. And I've boxed it up and will ultimately display it with this exhibition. And there are lots of other things. I mean, as I went, I found nuts and bolts, huge ones, and a gigantic set of keys that were all mangled, and a piece of the airplane. I have a small piece of the airplane I was given by somebody. And lots of little things that have come up. A workman's bag that has some old tools in it and some pinups. I mean, all crushed and covered in dust, you know. But somehow they have a poignancy to them because they were ordinary things that were, you know, just ripped out of their surroundings and then buried. You have no idea where they fell from. Oh, and there was one key that I found that had a little slug on the back of it, and it said, "World Trade Center, do not duplicate."
Your experience as photographing Ground Zero must have made you feel so much closer to New York than you even felt before.
Oh, I feel, I mean, so connected to the outcome of this. I mean, I really feel like I want to have a hand in it somehow. I've marched over that site for so many months that I feel I know it intimately, and I would, you know, I wish there was some way I could be part of the, you know, the consideration of the development of the site.
What kind of memorial would you like to see there?
Well, one of the things that's come to me, you know, from this effort of walking around and around the site is the real scale of it. You know, if you say 16 acres, it's almost hard to imagine what 16 acres is. But if you walk it just as an ordinary human being on the street, you get a sense of the pedestrian scale of it. And I've been thinking that a memorial might be a forest of perhaps 3,000 trees, one for every victim of the World Trade Center. In fact, I was thinking if there were 80 people from England, there should be 80 pine trees come from England and 60 from Russia, 40 from Italy, et cetera, et cetera. And I think of it as a pine forest meandering through the site so that it would give off its fragrance and its oxygen, and it would be a living memorial, and that each tree could be assigned a name rather than some plinth with a name inscribed in it. Wouldn't it be something to have a tree that you could go to and sit at the foot of and have that tree represent your parent, your loved one, so that there was a way of connecting? And in fact, there was a map printed in the Times a few months ago that showed, ghastly as this may seem, the distribution of bodies. It was wherever they found clusters or individuals, they marked it on a map. And I was thinking, couldn't that be, to some degree, the way one would approach this as a kind of a site work or a conceptual work, planting the trees in the clusters where they found the bodies so that it moved throughout the site around whatever buildings were there and created this green space that wasn't just formalized in a rectangle between two streets, but as something that moved and lived in the space and that marked the drama of the destruction in some permanent way.
Joel Marowitz, thanks for talking with us again, and thank you for documenting Ground Zero for us.
Thanks for inviting me again, Terry. It's an honor and a pleasure.
Several of Joel Marowitz's photographs of Ground Zero are published in this week's edition of The New Yorker. His collection will be given to the Museum of the City of New York. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.